This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Around 100 people protested in the town of San Ferdinando in southwestern Italy because of the death of a migrant who died in a terrible fire that swept through a tent city that is housing hundreds of migrants in the south of Italy.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. Full details on the story coming up.
Also, Kenya's Interior Ministry has declared Raila Odinga's opposition alliance, known as the National Resistance Movement, a criminal organization. And Cameroon has jailed 47 secessionists, including Ayukutabe Julius, head of a group from Cameroon's Anglophone region.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Kenya's Interior Ministry has declared the opposition alliance, known as the National Resistance Movement, a criminal organization after the group's leader, Raila Odinga, symbolically took the presidential oath of defiance of last year's controversial election. Authorities have said such an act would be considered treason. As VOA's Daniel Scharf reports from Nairobi, it's not clear what comes next for Kenya, given the political situation.
Opposition leader Raila Odinga was greeted by thousands of frenzied supporters at Nairobi's Uhuru Park Tuesday afternoon, despite a seven-hour delay. As the 73-year-old and his entourage drove through the crowd, his supporters jostled and some scuffled to see him inaugurated as the so-called People's President. After swearing an oath of office on a Bible, Odinga called it a historic day for the people of Kenya.
Today's step is one step towards me.
Meanwhile, the Interior Ministry wasted no time issuing a statement after the ceremony declaring Odinga's coalition, the National Resistance Movement, an organized criminal group under Kenya's Prevention of Organized Crimes Act. Odinga boycotted the rerun of last year's presidential runoff election and has refused to accept the victory of President Uhuru Kenyatta. Kenya's Attorney General said that Odinga declaring himself president would be considered an act of high treason, an offense punishable by death. President Kenyatta's office last week warned Odinga that any actions would be subject to Kenyan law. Although authorities used tear gas on supporters in an area near the event, an expected heavy police presence did not materialize. Opposition concerns that their leaders could be arrested before the event did not come to pass either.
That a people united can never be defeated. A people united.
Odinga briefly led the packed crowd in a chant, saying, "A people united can never be defeated," before slowly driving through the crowd and out of the park. Odinga's National Super Alliance contests the results of October's rerun election, which it boycotted after Kenya's Supreme Court took the rare step of annulling the August election due to failures by the Electoral Commission. Odinga says he won that August vote and accuses authorities loyal to President Kenyatta of covering it up. Election authorities have dismissed the claim, and the Supreme Court has backed Kenyatta's October win. Although there is no legal backing for Odinga's inauguration, many supporters like Peter Musyoka are optimistic. He says after the swearing in, he is expecting their president to lead them and give them a way forward. He says he believes that Kenya will completely change, their democracy will change, and Kenyans will fully understand their rights. In an exclusive interview with VOA's Swahili service earlier in January, Odinga raised the possibility of forming a rival government, either inside or outside of Kenya. After Odinga's swearing-in Tuesday afternoon, he promptly changed his Twitter handle to President of the Republic of Kenya. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Also in Kenya, independent local broadcasters say the government orchestrated a media blackout today to prevent live TV coverage of opposition leader Raila Odinga swearing himself in as the so-called People's President. Mohammed Yusuf has more from Nairobi.
Citizen TV was one of the three major stations to go off the air in Kenya Tuesday. Citizen TV had announced that it will be broadcasting live from the site of the opposition's rival presidential inauguration. In an interview with VOA, Washira Waruru, the head of the Royal Media Services, which owns Citizen TV and dozens of radio stations in Kenya, said the government was behind the shutdown.
Officials from the communications authority, accompanied by police officers, went to our transmission station in Limuru and they disabled our transmission. So we've been off air since.
Officials at the Communication Authority of Kenya declined to comment when reached by VOA. Also taken off air Tuesday were Nation Television and Kenya Television Network. Both had planned live coverage of Odinga's swearing-in event. Waruru says they did not see this coming.
We were shocked and disappointed because we don't believe there's anything we've done to warrant a shutdown. So we are very shocked and very disappointed that this can happen with no explanation of any kind.
Citizen TV and the others were able to live stream coverage Tuesday through the internet. Speaking to the Kenya Television Network, Odinga condemned what he called an attack on the media.
This is very unfortunate indeed. Basically confirms that we have descended to the level of Uganda, where, as you know, in the last general elections, all TV stations were shut off, including also the social media networks. We did not expect that this would come to our country. It is very unfortunate indeed, and it must stand condemned by all the civilized mankind.
As of 6 p.m. local time, all three TV stations remained off the air. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Around 100 people protested in the town of San Fernandino in southwestern Italy yesterday after a fatal fire in a tent city housing hundreds of migrants. The protesters marched in silence from the remains of the encampment to the town hall. The demonstration was organized by USB, a union that campaigns for migrant workers' rights. The local newspaper La Repubblica reported some of the demonstrators held photos of Becky Moses, a 26-year-old Nigerian woman who died in the fire. The newspaper also reported two other women were badly hurt and dozens of others received treatment for less serious injuries. Josephine McKenna is following developments in Rome and spoke with me about the protest and the fire.
Around 100 people protested in the town of San Fernandino in southwestern Italy because of the death of a migrant who died in a terrible fire that swept through a tent city that is housing hundreds of migrants in the south of Italy. Now, the protesters marched in silence through the remains of this camp to the town hall, the city hall of this town, and they've had strong support from one of the unions that's involved in helping migrant workers' rights. But this is a terrible tragedy, Kim. A woman called Becky Moses, a 26-year-old Nigerian woman, died in this fire that broke out at the tent camp between Friday and Saturday last weekend. And two other women were badly injured in this particular fire.
What were the protesters, what were they actually protesting in their march?
Well, this has been something, I think, of concern to many agricultural workers, migrant workers who are working in places like Calabria in the south of Italy where this took place. They've been very upset for a long time, I think, about the conditions that they have to live in order to survive. The woman who died, the Nigerian woman, Becky Moses, had only been at this camp for a few days before her death. And she was previously a resident in Riace, another town in Calabria. So we're seeing some concern about the migrants who are forced to live in very difficult conditions in camps like this one on the outskirts of San Fernandino. And around 1,000 people are living in tents and shacks in this area, often working for minimal wages and sleeping without electricity or running water. And so this was also part of the protest, people just very angry that they have to put up with these conditions. And then, of course, the fire that had such fatal consequences.
What is the mood like today?
Well, I think people here are very concerned. They want change. They're demanding change. And many migrants feel that they simply don't have a voice and they don't have rights in this country. When you look at the case of Becky Moses, the woman who died, she had recently had her application for political asylum denied. She was forced to leave the town that she was living in and forced to sleep in a tent in San Fernando where this fire occurred. And that gives you some idea, I think, of the frustration and the powerlessness that many migrants feel when they come to this country.
And what has been the reaction from the town's officials?
Well, the prefect of Reggio Calabria, the city and the province nearby, his name is Michele Di Bari, he called for a meeting of the local committee, the local politicians, for order and security, public security, to try and put in place necessary measures to overcome what's considered a bit of an emergency, actually, the explosion in the number of migrants living in this tent camp, and to try and ensure that we don't have any disasters, any more disasters like this one at the weekend.
That was Josephine McKenna speaking with me from Rome.
Sixteen past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Cameroon has jailed 47 secessionists, including Ayouk Tabe Julius, head of a group from Cameroon's Anglophone region, pushing for a breakaway from French-dominant Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon government spokesperson Issa Chiruma Bakari says Ayouk Tabe Julius and his 9 cabinet members were arrested in Nigeria on January 5. They were brought to Yaoundé and handed over to the government of Cameroon Monday. He says the collaboration of the governments of Cameroon and Nigeria worked together to arrest the armed separatists.
The government of Cameroon takes this opportunity to commend the excellent cooperation existing between Nigeria and Cameroon, particularly with regard to security. The government of Cameroon reaffirms the determination of both countries never to tolerate that their territory be used as a base for destabilizing activities directed against one of them.
Since Ayouk Tabe and his group were arrested, they have never been seen in public, either in Cameroon or in Nigeria. Armed separatists said on social media that they had been detained in a police cell in Abuja and were refused access to their lawyers. On December 2017, Nigerian local newspapers reported that a group of 37 English-speaking Cameroonians had been arrested near Gembu in Taraba State while they were receiving military training to return and fight for the independence of a state they call Ambazonia. After their arrests, simultaneous attacks were reported in 2 English-speaking regions, with the government reporting that at least 18 policemen and soldiers had been killed. Several dozens of the attackers also died, and at least 6 villages were burned. Last week, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees announced that tens of thousands of Cameroonians had fled across the border to Nigeria as a result of the violence. Funky Samuel, moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Cameroon, says the arrest of the suspected separatists may lead to further violence and killing.
What is the option and the way out is the proper, well-staged and organized dialogue. You cannot have unity and peace without justice.
Cameroon has not said where those arrested persons will be tried. Its 2014 anti-terrorism law says that anyone who uses weapons against the government will face a military tribunal. If convicted on such charges, they could face the death sentence. The unrest in Cameroon began in November when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the northwest and southwest regions, frustrated with having to work in French, took to the streets, calling for reforms and greater autonomy. Moki Edwin Kinzaka For VOA News, Yaoundé.
Small pilotless aircraft offer big benefits for African governments trying to provide health care and security to their people. Their use was among the topics of last week's World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with one Davos expert about the innovative use of drones in Africa.
From fighting crime to protecting crops to saving new mothers, drones are quickly becoming key tools in Africa. Timothy Reuter directs the Drones and Tomorrow's Airspace project at the World Economic Forum's Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution.
Drones have the potential to connect rural areas that are currently disconnected from government services and economic activity.
In Tanzania, drones are used to drop off medical supplies to underserved rural areas. And in Zambia, the government partners with a private company to collect blood samples in the bush and deliver them to distant laboratories for analysis.
The most famous case is actually Rwanda, which is the first country on the planet to have national-scale drone delivery. And Rwanda had the first pilot to bring blood supplies to remote rural areas. And they have impacted over 1,000 patient lives, including saving women who had severe bleeding during childbirth.
Governments face the challenge of integrating drones into a country's airspace and regulating them so they're used safely. Reuters says his center's work with Rwanda shows this can be done.
Rwanda was one of the first countries to partner with the Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution, ensuring that drones that are flying beyond the line of sight of the operator and potentially over people are flown in a safe manner. So drones don't fall out of the sky or interfere with manned aviation.
Drones are less labor-intensive and more environmentally friendly than helicopters, which are noisy and burn a lot of gasoline. That's why drones are increasingly used in Africa's nature parks for tasks such as counting animal populations. They can also control animals that venture onto human settlements and prey on farm animals or trample crops. Drones also help nature park tour guides locate the animals that tourists want to see. More tourists means more jobs for locals and a healthier economy. Reuter adds the drones also help counter illegal animal poaching.
You can have a live feed of people who are trying to stalk the game animals and then send some sort of enforcement after them.
Agriculture is a critical area where drones can help. Because they are relatively cheap to buy and maintain, drones can provide valuable data about weather and other environmental factors at a fraction of the cost that satellite providers typically charge. And that's not all, says Reuter.
With drones and aerial imagery, you can often collect data that's on frequencies that are not visible to the naked eye, and thus you can detect damage to fields that you're not able to see just by looking at them.
In Uganda, for example, coffee collectives are using drones to identify pests before they destroy fields. They can also detect crop damage and fields that need water or pesticide.
So that ultimately will lead to precision agriculture that makes much more use of existing land and resources.
But Reuter cautions that precisely because drones generate so much agricultural data so quickly, they must be paired with affordable online computers that can analyze all that raw information. When fields that have lain fallow due to conflict or disputes become productive, the economy benefits. Drones can also help in disaster response and relief efforts. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
U.S. President Donald Trump is expected to highlight a strong economy and called for bipartisan action on immigration as he gives his first State of the Union address tonight. The televised speech before a joint session of Congress comes a year after Trump took office and about a week after a three-day government shutdown spawned by a fight over the federal government budget and how to deal with hundreds of thousands of immigrants who years ago came to the country illegally as children. White House officials said Trump will discuss jobs, the advancing U.S. economy, and the recently adopted tax cuts, as well as call on lawmakers to approve his prospective $1 trillion infrastructure plan to fix roads and bridges and modernize airports. Trump's year in office has been marked by his frequent Twitter attacks on his political opponents, Democratic lawmakers, and the occasional Republican who have drawn his ire for opposing his policies. But the White House says Trump will give an optimistic speech calling for resolution of contentious issues by both Republicans and Democrats working together. Officials say he will give a unifying speech of American values and patriotism.
Rated Zimbabwe's top festival and in the top 10 of the best festivals in the continent, the Harare International Festival of the Arts is getting set for this year's events. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinavashi has the report.
The Harare International Festival of the Arts, or HIFA, has become a Zimbabwe tradition. Maria Wilson is the HIFA Executive Director.
And I think a lot of us in this country feel it. And we feel that we need to have positive eyes looking at us and a positive attitude to what we are as a people, because we achieve the most amazing things. At least 1,000 Zimbabwean artists participating in 6 days in this festival held in the capital of a country that really everybody should be sitting up and looking at and thinking, my goodness, that is an amazing group of people.
This year the festival runs the first week of May and its theme is We Count.
Ladies, do we count? So this is the theme of HIFA 2018. We count. We mean something. We stand for something. We say something. Not only that, what else do we count? We count our experiences. We count our votes.
This year's edition is happening against a backdrop of a declining economy, a continued cash crisis, and looming price increases. Plot Marco is an artist and promoter.
I think the hosting of HIFA this year is indicative of the confidence that the country is starting to have. So for the creative sector, I think it means defiance of the prevailing economic challenges.
Marco says HIFA this year will ignite much-needed inspiration for the new freedom of expression many people say they are starting to enjoy under Zimbabwe's new leadership. HIFA is one of the biggest employers in Zimbabwe's art world. But aside from the jobs it provides artists and support staff, the festival offers mentorships and opportunities to collaborate with some of the international acts that perform at the festival. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll review the death of 38-year-old Ugandan refugee Alfred Olungo, who was shot and killed by police in California in September 2016. His death was among several captured on video in a year when anger over U.S. police shootings, particularly of black men, rose to new heights. Olungo's status as a Ugandan refugee brought international attention not only to the issue of race, but how police react to people who may have psychiatric problems. VOA and our partner station NBS TV in Kampala teamed up to examine what happened and whether the shooting could have been prevented. The death of Alfred Olango on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.